Blog Talk Radio.
Joining us tonight, we're going to have a special guest by the name of Mr. J.D. Cogman. He is a mythologist and astrologer. He uses the title astrologer, and I'm going to have him explain what that means. And he's also going to be doing free chart readings, so please don't hesitate to call. Our call-in phone number tonight is 347-989-0748. Again, 347-989-0748. And for calls, please, if you want a reading, please have your date and time and location of your birth. That gives the most accurate way of us getting an accurate reading for you astrologically. Now, the show was upgraded to an hour plus. Tonight, we're just going to do an hour. I originally announced that JD was going to be with us tonight and tomorrow. He's just going to be with us tonight, actually. So please disregard what you might see in the video commercial. He's with us tonight only. Also, please consider that our guest is feeling a Mercury retrograde and is a little bit under the weather right now. So his voice is, he wants to go in and do the show. His voice is a little bit shaky, but he wants to go ahead and try to push on through for me, for you, for, you know, for all of us. Let's go ahead and do the portal days. Now, the portal days, as I used to do on Black Hole Radio, were related to the Mayan Zolkin calendar. The Zolkin calendar was a calendar that was used for more spiritual purposes during the Mayan and probably back to the Olmec civilization. The portal days are days when it's best. They're actually called galactic activation portals. That's a time when it's best to do your spiritual ritual work. It helps to attune your DNA with the cosmos. The portal days that are coming up are tomorrow, January the 10th, and then a little bit later on, January the 27th. Also, right now, we're in a new moon phase that lasts until tomorrow, so you got a portal and a new moon lining up. Plus, we have then the full moon will be the 24th of January. So, without further ado, I want to go ahead and bring this gentleman on. Mr. J.D. Cogman is going to discuss astrology, the stars, and how these things relate to us as in our everyday walk. Let's see. All right, J.D., are you there?
I am here.
All right. You sound a lot better already, man.
Mercury retrograde has some benefits. I'm doing fine. How are you, sir?
I'm doing good. Thank you. This has been, I don't know if everybody realizes, this has been a long time coming. When I was originally doing Black Hole Radio, I wanted to have JD on, but I was so stop and go with the show. But now I'm on, we're on for good, and I've got this gentleman on to share his gifts with us. So I'd like to start, JD, with you telling everybody a little bit about yourself, who you are, where you are, and what you do.
Well, since you said the show's only an hour, I think I will stick to just simply letting people know that the term astrologer is just the combination of the word astro for stars and astrology, and in some cases astronomy and philosophy, because we have no real agreement between what science says astrology is and what us astrologers say astrology is. I just use the term astrologer and try to explain things in the context of how they can apply for you philosophically and how you can apply them in your life. Therefore, leaving out the need to have to argue about acrimonious points of which things are right, which things are wrong, because there are several varieties of astrology out there: sidereal astrology, tropical astrology, Mayan, Aztec, Native American, nine-star Japanese, Eastern, Western. We could just go on about it for hours.
Okay, so it's a way of saying you have your own perspective on these things without getting into arguing semantics with people who want to argue what astrology means to them, what this or that might mean to them, basically.
Precisely.
Okay, okay. Now, when you were young, when you were a child, what sparked your interest in astrology and mythology? What were your original exposures to those?
Staring at the stars in the skies, wondering what they were, for hours at a time, and then having a parent would play lots and lots of music. And of course, I got a hold of the back of an Earth, Wind, and Fire album and saw all the symbols and started looking very closely everywhere to see where else that I saw them. And as I got older, I'd look them up, and I even had my parent read some of the stuff that were in the books to me to see if I could, you know, understand what it was supposed to be about. But these days, I have the same parent laugh in my face and say, "Ha ha, I read you maybe four paragraphs. The rest of that is you, boo." I don't know where that came from. So there are many ways we can look at it, but since childhood, I also worked teaching as a docent at a science museum here in San Francisco. And I think one of the things that I really, really got into was trying to prove it wrong scientifically. And what I discovered was, in my quest to invalidate it when I was a, you know, late teen, it actually had the opposite effect when I was talking to certain, you know, scientists who held PhDs, and we'd have discussions about quantum singularities and such, and they really gave me the lowdown about how much scientific and mathematical jargon essentially means that they don't know what happens after that particular point in the discussion or the theory. And that is why today we have places like CERN and the Large Hadron Collider, which are looking for things like the Higgs boson particle and finding other physics biparticles in the process. So it's sort of an argument that's always in process. And this is why, as an astrologer, I never endeavor to tell people what to think or to do. In fact, it's the opposite. I always push people to challenge me and all of my ideas and to seek out the answers for themselves, because they are always their own best captain.
Right, right, right. It's a journey of knowledge for self, so they have to interpret it and digest everything through themselves anyway. So, yeah, I understand. Let me add, you mentioned that there are different kinds of astrology. You mentioned sidereal and tropical. Can you give us just a basic breakdown of what the difference might be in layman's terms?
In layman's terms, okay. So the best thing, okay, so the tropical astrology versus sidereal astrology argument is an old one, to the point where I don't even, like, engage with people who get into that discussion. But essentially, one is saying that astrology is what it is based on the constellations, and the other is saying that astrology is what it is based on the sectors of the sky divided into 12 different sectors that we have zodiac signs for, of approximately 30 degrees each. So the difference is we have the main tropical point, which we all know as being an equator, and that's what divides the northern hemisphere from the southern hemisphere. But then at the top, we've got the Tropic of Cancer, and at the bottom, we've got the Tropic of Capricorn. And when the sun passes the equator on its way to the northern hemisphere, which is the Tropic of Cancer, and the northern hemisphere, once it gets there, we experience what's called summer. And then opposite of the world, in places like Brazil and Australia, they experience winter. And when it passes back the opposite direction, obviously they have summer, and us in the northern hemisphere have winters. Now, each time that sun passes over the equator, if it's on its way to the northern hemisphere, they're going to experience fall, and we're going to experience spring. And when it passes again back to the southern part, again, you can see it's going to be exactly the opposite. And that's why we call it tropical, because we line up the zodiacs according to its relationship with those lines geometrically. But that's only the closest I can give you to that part of the layman's argument for tropical. But for sidereal astrology, it would also mean that the Earth has its wobble, and it's actually going backwards in the zodiac, because you've got two ways.
Equinoxes.
Exactly. This is the precession of the equinoxes. So when we are talking about regular day-to-day astrology, that's our trip of the Earth going around the sun in 366 days. But when we're talking about the precession of the equinoxes, we're talking about the tilt of the Earth going up and down, and that is how we're seeing the sun that looks like it's going to that Tropic of Cancer and Tropic of Capricorn and the equator, respectively. The reason this is important is we are going backwards on that timeline, and so for the first day of spring, we are generally now sitting at the end, at the beginning of Aquarius, or the age of Aquarius, as we call it, in the precession. And that means we're going backwards at an average of 70, at 1 degree every 72 years. So that means we have ages for, let's see, each age is about 2,160 years, and then you've got 12 of them, and they equal about 25,920 years. And a lot of people call that a Pleiadian or galactic year. But again, that's what's kind of tough about this discussion, because you say layman's terms, and there's very specific mathematical arguments you'd have to really understand to be able to differentiate the two and have an actual civilized discussion about it.
Okay. Well, I think you laid it out there pretty good. We do have a caller, it looks like. Do you want to try to go ahead and do a reading?
Absolutely. Whatever. We're going to take it one step at a time. We're going to acknowledge that it's Mercury retrograde. We're also going to acknowledge that it is new moon in Capricorn, and we're going to endeavor to do our absolute best with whoever it is that's decided to share themselves with us today.
All right, let's bring them on. Okay, caller from 586-453, you're on live on iMagination Radio. Can I have your name and where you're calling from?
Hi, this is Romara. I'm calling from Michigan.
Okay, you're live with J.D. Cogman. J.D., you want to take over?
Hi, Romara.
Hi.
How you doing?
I'm doing all right. How are you?
I'm doing well. Or much better than earlier.
Good.
How can I help you today?
Well, I wanted to get a reading done for the new year.
Okay.
I'm having some relationship issues, and the relationship basically is over with. I have a 6-month exit plan to leave.
Okay.
Because I have children, so
oh.
I need to see what's going on.
You need a good exit plan. So here's the thing. First, I'm going to just put, how do you spell your first name?
My birth name is R-O. M is in Mary, A-R-A.
Okay. and I'm just going to give you the last name Radio to keep you anonymous.
Okay.
What's your date of birth?
2471.
Okay. And what time were you born?
9:19 a.m.
Okay. And where was this at?
Chicago, Illinois.
Oh, so, well, you'll have to excuse me. I just, of course, ran into my first Mercury retrograde snafu. You said 9:19 a.m.?
Yes.
Okay. Let me be absolutely sure I get that right. Okay. So, do you identify with some of the traits of being Aquarius?
Yes, I do.
Okay. So before I go anywhere, the first thing that needs to be discussed, and, you know, this is, you know, not just astrology, but this is just plain common sense. Most Aquarian people are strong-willed and very, very smart. So already, that's always usually a problem in relationships, in that when you express yourself and you tell the truth as it is and you actually expect other people to rise to their responsibility, it usually creates conflict and strife. And one of the toughest things that goes down with Aquarius is being able to present your disagreements with the other person in a way that doesn't press their buttons and make them want to fight you over every little detail.
Okay.
Because of one of the things, and you can, you know, tell me if I'm crazy, but one of the things somebody with your chart would have a problem with is diplomacy, trying to tell somebody something with finesse so that the person actually receives you, not just hears you. I mean, we talk to people every day and we give them our opinion.
Mm-hmm.
But
mm-hmm.
if we say things in such a way that they're not receiving us, then it becomes a fight. And so first thing I want to point out is you got a couple of issues going on here.
mm-hmm.
Number one, your sun is in Aquarius, which means you're
mm-hmm.
a fighter for humanity. Your sun is also in the 11th house. Your rising is Aries. Oh, so temper, number one. And number two, you got to work on your patience, don't you?
Yes, I do.
Because when you got something to say, oh, you're going to hammer them with it. And not only are you going to hammer them with it, your moon is in Gemini. So that means you are witty. And when you say something, it stings. So one of the things that I want to be clear on is you're probably saying things in the relationship that is ostracizing that other person's ego to such a degree that you guys are splitting apart, when the reality
mm-hmm.
is you have this exact same superpower to be a coach for that person. So instead of bouncing back and saying something, I mean, because of, here's the trick, you're probably right 98% of the time. But as I was told as a child, when you present truth out of season to people, it's just like giving them fruit or vegetables out of season. They're probably
mm-hmm.
going to get sick.
Yeah.
And the only reason I say first try to work it out, or, you know, try to see if you guys can come back, because also it's going to be a lot more challenging out there in terms of finding somebody that you really, really like. Because one of your problems as an Aquarius, and I don't really think that this is a problem per se, but it's an expectation, you don't do stupid very well. And in the dating world, the stupid is pretty big. And what that means is you can find someone so incredibly attractive, they open their mouth and say something stupid, it is over. You can't do it. So I would have to imagine that this person that you're with is pretty smart in a lot of ways. It's just that they have shortcomings that need to be worked on. And part of your shortcoming is learning how to be a coach and walk alongside of them instead of the boss in front of them that's dictating what should happen. Are you following?
Yeah, I'm following.
Am I off base, or do you understand?
Well, just, no, I understand, but in this relationship, he's the dictator. That's the problem.
Aha! That's beautiful,
he's
then.
The dictator. He's a Gemini, so he's a dictator.
Okay, so then there you go. Unfortunately, it may mean that you need to let that go. And I don't want to judge, but I'm saying that from the perspective, and of course I can't really give you a full picture because I don't have him here and I don't see his chart. But I also want to point out that you have Mars, Jupiter, and Neptune all in Sagittarius. You also have Venus in Sagittarius. And this means that you are wise and smart. And you're always looking to make a better world. You want people to be educated. You want them always to do better. The problem is you tend to use bluntness like a bat. Like you, when you pick up a bat and smack somebody on the head with the truth. And the sad thing is, yeah, you laugh because you know it's real. The only sad part about all of this is this Gemini probably needs it because of, as much as I love my bouncing crystal ball Geminis, they can get a little bit arrogant. But when they get arrogant, it's usually a sign that they're feeling uncomfortable or insecure about something. And really, in all relationships, that's all of our issue, is we have bounced back when we are uncomfortable or insecure about something that we haven't necessarily worked through. So how long has the back and forth taken place?
It's been going on for a few weeks, but the relationship had been deteriorating for months.
Okay.
And now,
and you guys have been together for how long?
For 4 years. He's very neglectful now, and he his neglect is almost disrespectful, and he neglects my children also.
So then the real question might be, and I do say might because I don't know all the answers, why would this be anything other than confirmation to let the person go? Because the bottom line is when we want things from people, we want them to give of themselves without us having to make the request. And as I say this, I want to be clear because I don't feel like I'm telling you anything that you don't already know. As an astrologer, we never tell you anything that you don't already know. What we do is we bring up the context for what you're willfully not looking at. And basically, where you are, I mean, your Mercury is in Capricorn. So when you have something to say, you get right to the point. Not only do you get right to the point, anybody who gives you a bunch of talk that doesn't actually have any substance, you answer back very curt, very quick, and you let that go. You don't get into banter with people when you know they're wrong. And it sounds to me like what's going on for you at this point is you realize that the behavior that you're experiencing, maybe I shouldn't use the term, is wrong, but isn't right for you. And really what this is about is your process of letting go. Because you and I both know if this is really supposed to work, that person will come back when they cool off. Sometimes when we allow egos the time and the space to deflate, people will come back and sort out how they authentically feel, tell mm-hmm. us what they need. Then we can decide whether or not we can meet those needs and move forward together. But somebody with this particular chart looking at you, I think your chemical attraction for somebody like a Gemini is wonderful because there's this great camaraderie and there's always that feeling with Aquarius and Gemini, like you've done this before, like you've been alive in a separate life, like it just sort of happens so
yes,
quick and it feels so right.
At first. Yeah.
Exactly. So I'm only validating that because I want you to know that that's not your imagination. But the other piece is you're about the bigger picture. It's you're not just about taking care of yourself. You're not just about taking care of him. You're about taking care of the kids. You're about taking care of the community. And beyond that, you're always about, gee, what is going wrong with the world? What are we doing about that mm-hmm. next? So if
yeah.
somebody isn't mature enough that they can keep up, you know, lockstep with that type of mentality, they're probably not going to succeed long term with you. And that would mean that perhaps you need to question of the situation, what is it that you are truly looking for? Are you looking for someone like this that you have to put all that energy into to get them to be what you want? Or is it perhaps time to find that person who's going to be what you need without you having to make them over on any level?
Yeah.
And that's what I mean by this might be a process of you to letting go more than it is
yeah.
a blame
yeah.
game.
Yeah, it is.
And because you're an Aries rising man, you're smart and, you know, but you know about that patience thing. You know, somebody pressed that wrong button.
Yeah.
You're going to take them down verbally.
Yeah.
But I say good luck. What I see in your chart is a very smart, strong woman who knows how to communicate. There's always going to be a bit of a challenge out there because of, I don't know, what has happened in our generation. You got a lot of men who really, really love strong women and can handle them. And then you've got a lot of men where a woman shows the least good amount of strength and they want to leave and go somewhere else. And the reality is, man, you always need somebody who's just as strong as you are. So you never benefit yourself going to find somebody who's weak because of that weaker person isn't going to help you to develop to your highest potential. And
mm-hmm.
so when you see this person running, please best believe that they are running from themselves and not from you.
Okay.
Wow. Wow. Did that kind of hit home for you?
Absolutely, absolutely. About myself and about the relationship.
Oh, well,
what's called a solar return, but I wanted to just do this based on just her natal chart because of when you're talking about relationships, it's usually best to deal directly with the person than to engage too much of what the other person is doing because they're not there.
They're not there, right? You don't get the balance of the other person's energy.
Precisely.
That makes perfect sense. All right, well, thank you, Ramar, for calling in. I hope you're able to take that and see yourself in that reading. JD, it doesn't look like we have a caller right now. Let's move on with a couple more questions. Let's talk a little bit about mythology particularly. How do you think mythology could be used as a learning tool, especially since you work in the field of education?
Well, mythology can be used as a bridge of cultural understanding and cultural literacy. It's one thing that we all live in the Western world and everybody knows who Zeus is and, you know, the Greek name Zeus. And everybody knows his name in Rome is Jupiter, but it's really sad that many people don't know that there's that same association with Kukulcan or Quetzalcoatl. Lakota of the Americas. I guess in the Norse mythology, we would have, you know, people like Thor, the various sky gods around the world, and then obviously, you know, the different incarnations of Ra and Osiris, whether we're talking about Rahorakti or if, you know, whether we're talking about Amen or Amun, depending on which dynasty of Egypt that you're talking about. And I have found that when you are able to get people to understand that the same mythologies are taking place on all of the different continents at disparate times, you begin to get people to see that any tone of cultural superiority or trying to make others feel like they are less is usually a figment of your own ego and will not always contribute to the development of society as a whole. And I believe that understanding and being able to present it that way, you begin to start to construct a more cohesive society instead of one that is divided. Because in the way the world is falling apart right now, this is just another form of divide and conquer so that people feel isolated and alone instead of feel empowered to come together and support each other until we have the quality of love, life, work balance that's necessary for us to all feel consistently happy and grow as a planet, not just all of these separate entities distributed around Mother Earth.
Right. Wow. And you kind of brought it all the way back to something else I wanted to touch on. What astrologically do you think, where do you see in the stars we're headed? Where cosmically are we headed? We've talked about the precession of the equinoxes entering the age of Aquarius. What do you see the state of the world and the state of human beings and, you know, the state of America, mass shootings, let's get our hands dirty. Where do you see all this leading to as an astral philosopher?
Well, okay, so let's look at it this way. First of all, I'm going to be clear again. Obviously, these are just my thoughts and my opinions, and I don't want to push them on anyone else. I want to make sure that everybody does their research and their homework because that's what I'm all about. And at the end of the day, I want us to all be able to present different sides so that we can explore together and leave our egos in check. But that being said, I think one of the things that you mentioned earlier in talking about the Mayan Aztec pantheon and the galactic portals and the different waves that go with that, one of the biggest waves opens between 1960 and 2040. And that's supposed to be change and change for the better. And it's really, really sad and on some level kind of pathetic, forgive the judgment, that a lot of people thought that in 2012 the world was going to end based on what they heard from the Mayan Aztec pantheon. And no Mayan, no Aztec, anywhere in any type of writing or the Popol Vuh or, you know, the Dresden Codex said no such thing. What right. that was about is people misinterpreting what they call themselves transliterating. And one of the main things that they did make clear is that this was supposed to be an end of times, but not end of times in terms of destruction or an extinction level event. What they were referring to was the end of the old system. And you and I know that that system is of slavery, of feudalism, plutocracy, oligarchy. I could throw out a million other adjectives, but right. separating it from the Mayan Aztec pantheon and looking at it from the Western astrological perspective and even the sidereal perspective, if we're talking about the precession of the equinoxes going into Aquarius, Aquarius is supposed to represent the waters of purification. Of course, the irony is that Aquarius is actually an air sign, but they carry the water jug and they pour that water as a cleansing agent so that people are, the symbol is supposed to be pouring that water as a cleansing agent, so that people begin to grow forward together. Like if you ever look at the symbolism for Aquarius, the two waves, people tend to think of that as water, and really you can look at that as the waves of electricity, the waves of thought,
radio waves.
Waves come in so many different forms. And the reason we have to hit on that Aquarius point so hard is because of, if each age is 2160, 2160 years long, that means each degree is 72 years. So that means we're on a cusp right now. Just like the old song from the 60s, we're at the dawn of the age of Aquarius. Actually, they're not kidding. 72 years is 1 degree as far as the precession of the equinoxes is concerned. And the new age for Aquarian thinking is all about consciousness. It's about this idea and concept that we are all becoming more aware than we've ever been before. And there's this like understandings and philosophy that it's not just about taking care of ourselves, it's about taking care of the people around us, and it's about learning to get past our egos and finding ways to build bridges of understandings with people that we call, quote unquote, our enemy. Because of the concept of the Aquarian age is also the idea that the Earth's consciousness is actually unified. A lot of people like Edgar Cayce, they use terms like the Akashic Records, which means, you know, it's the part of the Earth that we all connect to on a deeper, more psychic level. And it's what makes us, gives us our intuition, our insight into the future. And the more we move forward with that sort of thinking in mind, then our constructiveness is about what we're doing collectively on a transpersonal level to take care of the planet. So that means all of our individual experiences and growth around, you know, the birth and death of our ego begins to contribute collectively to how we can move forward as a unit. And a good example of that would be people trying desperately to learn ways of living off the grid or living within their means, or all of these things that are going to separate them from having to be dependent on the greater power structures that have done nothing less than enslave us over the millennium.
Well, it's time to be free. It is definitely time for that. So we have another caller. Let me see if we have another reading for you. Just a second here. Okay, caller from 780-482. You're on live on iMagi Nation. Can I have your name and where you're calling from?
Yes, my name is Jay. I'm calling from Canada.
Canada, wow.
Hello.
Okay, my first Canada caller. Hey Jay, do you have your? Are you wanting to get a astrological reading from JD today?
Yeah, yes, please. Thank you.
Okay. Can you put? Let me step back.
Okay.
Well, did I miss something? The sound kind of went off for a second.
Well, I was going to say, let me step out of the way, and you ask him what information you need for the reading.
Yeah.
Okay. So Jay, I'm going to just put your last name as Canada. Because we want to keep you anonymous. What is your date of birth?
March 24th, 1964.
Oh. Okay. So March 24th, 1964. Woo! Okay, you're born in the whole Pluto and Virgo thing. Yes. What time?
11:54 p.m.
Okay. And which city?
Medicine Hat, Alberta, Canada.
Wow. How do how do you spell that? Madison Hat?
Medicine.
Medicine. Spell that out for me. Oh, like medicine. In medicine.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. Now let's see if I can, in fact, find it on an atlas. And it pops right up. Okay, so what question would you have for me today?
Yeah, just doing an adventure and just exploring myself for this year, and just wondered, just getting prepared maybe for the chaos that might happen this year, too, so.
Well, you're talking about in general?
Yeah, in general, because it's, I've been prepared for a while for this, but this is the crunch time, I think, for myself to really get out there, find out stuff of who I am.
Well, see, the first thing I would notice about your chart is my concern would be you running from romantic relationships. And, you know, the only reason I'm saying it is because of your first house is about your personality and your seventh house is about your love life. And the only thing there has a lot to do with this examination and philosophical piece, but it's almost as if you're not putting yourself out there emotionally. it's almost like it's a, what's the word for it? It's almost like you're taking a scientific approach to something that you need to allow your intuition to guide you on, and that the rest will take place upon itself. I don't know if you know this, but you are a quadruple Aries.
What's that mean?
Well, for me, when I look at this, the first thing that I would think is somebody like you is extremely, like, smart, but that same voice that's really, really good for pointing things out, sometimes you turn it on yourself and become really, really critical when it's just not necessary. It's actually a tool for you to develop yourself but not hurt yourself with. So the first one of the things I would tell you about is be careful of self-judgment, like really, really continue to do your very best at all of these things. Because some people would just call that being competitive, but I don't think that that's always the case with somebody like you, because of the Aries mostly takes place in the fourth house. And this means that unlike your typical Aries, which would be almost like the archetype football player, you would be different from that because your Aries is in the fourth house, which means you have a lot of very strong emotions and you have a very, very powerful intuition. And it would mean that at times you've got this incredible logic for what you can and cannot do, but then your intuition will say something to you, you'll really see something else intuitively, but you'll know politically that you can't say anything. So it kind of leaves you questioning your intuition a lot of times, even though, as I'm sure I don't need to tell you, many times things will happen and then you'll say to yourself, see, I knew that, but I felt like I couldn't say anything about it.
Yes.
So, go ahead.
Even when I meet people.
Yes. Are you going to meet people this year?
Well, yeah, I just the romance thing, I just like, it hasn't happened for me for a while, so.
Right.
I'm really smart. Yeah, I'm really intuitive. You're right about that. I'm really, really smart and intuitive. I mean, what? I can pick out people right away. I know what's going on, but you know what? You're right. I can't say anything because it's not my
right.
Truth.
It just is. But here's the way to get past it. And, you know, again, remember, this is about me reading the sky as it was at the moment of your birth. So these are all the indications. So one of the big things that's going down for you is you have a Sagittarius rising in all of this, which means inside of you exists a terrible contradiction. One part of you is this like incredible, almost like professor type personality, and the other part of you is like a party boy, like a frat boy. And I don't mean that in a, you know, like a little kid version of it, or, you know, in college, but like somebody who truly wants to let go and truly be free and, you know, travel and explore things. Like, this would be the great chart of somebody who could be a philanthropist if they had the money and the means to go around the world. But in terms of your issue with the love life part, is the unfortunate piece is you're going to often find yourself attracted to the crazy ones. And the reason I say attracted to the crazy ones is you need the ones that will push you out of your comfort zone. And that's probably the reason that it's not happening, because of the Aries part of you wants that daredevil adventure. But sitting in Cancer's house kind of makes it oppressed. So it means that you always tend to make error towards being cautious more than putting on a daredevil jumpsuit and putting on that bungee cord and jumping into the unknown. And you have that desire to do it. Now it's time to stop overthinking and just go.
That's the reason why I took this intensive. I took a yoga intensive this year, so.
Excellent. Because of, as you know, doing yoga, and especially if you're doing an intensive, that means you're doing all of the work of the chakras and getting in touch with the etheric body and, you know, learning to understand the grounding and how the anahata, the heart works, you know, as the bridge to connect the physical with the spiritual and the trans-dimensional, or like that's what I tend to call it, not just the cosmos, but the trans-dimensional. But one of the things that I would also put in there is you've got Pluto, Uranus, and the moon all in the same house. Okay, so part of what has happened to you your whole life is sudden and shocking things will happen and your life will be transformed. You have probably had some moments where you have just completely gone down in flames and you've had to go through that long dark night of the soul and literally resurrect and become a new you in order to move forward. And a lot of that, I believe, from looking at your chart, is based on the fact that you get way into taking only the comfortable and prudent choice. And as an adult in this world, I totally understand and I respect that. And I think that that, you know, it's what we're taught and conditioned to do. But my concern is that since it's in the ninth house, which is typically associated with Sagittarius and freedom and expansion, those are Virgo energies, and Virgo is square with Sagittarius, which means there's tension, there's fighting. There are energies that can lead to a lot of strife, but the issue is once you fight your way through that strife, what comes out of it will push you way further ahead. It's almost like building a business with a sworn enemy that you always disagree with. It might be tough getting through the nuts and bolts, but because of you're both giving your opposite of opinions, you actually end up resolving issues that are a problem for both sides. And then what you produce is so superior because it covers so many bases. So I do believe you're being careful and fearful on any level is merited, but I also now need you to start believing more in you and recognizing that, yes, you are going to screw up, and that is actually part of the process, and that you are allowed to have that part. It's just that Aries part of you that is competitive more with yourself than anyone else, it does not like failure. And that will keep you from making certain types of choices when, in fact, you need to just give yourself that freedom.
Okay.
I mean, you've got some pretty good stuff here. I mean, you should be, like, a great organizer. Like, I'm looking at
it. I am.
I mean, you are, yeah, obviously. I mean, like, let me put it to you this way. If I needed something organized, I mean, I part of me is wondering how clean your house must be. And I'm laughing because, are you a good cook?
Not really. Yeah.
Because of, I'm laughing at the fact that home is, should, most Aries are about socializing, but since you've got all this Aries sitting in Cancer's house, I'm wondering if your home isn't some sort of, like, oasis in a lot of ways, your place that you really retreat to have your alone time, because of somebody like you is that contradiction where you really, really want your alone time, but then you really, really want to get out there and socialize. And right now, you should be in a phase of finding balance because of right now, you've passed the most critical part, and that was 10 years ago when Uranus was in Virgo, because right now Uranus is in Libra. So you haven't been as beaten up as a lot of the people who are a little bit younger than you. You kind of escaped a fireball.
Okay. Well,
so is there anything else specific?
No,
that you need?
Actually, that's really specific, so I haven't had a reading like this before. So, good.
Well, also, keep in mind, one of the things that this is your North Node. Your North Node is also in Cancer. So, in a lot of ways, I really challenge you, when you look up what Aries is about, look up what Cancer is about. You'll probably start to put the picture together a little bit more, and you'll be like, whoa, how have I been missing this? Because of, I would argue that you are just as much a Cancer as you are an Aries. You've got Jupiter, Mercury, and the Sun all in Aries. You also have a planet named Eris in it, but I won't get into that because most people don't understand her role. But the reason I put that out there is your will is very strong. The way you communicate with everybody is also very strong, very authentic. But the concern with Jupiter being in Aries is sometimes because of your enthusiasm, if you're in certain situations, you could potentially overcommit, and that's probably why you're very careful. You may have had some instances in your life where your enthusiasm did get the better of you and you did overcommit, and a disaster happened and that Virgo kicked in and said, okay, that's never going to happen again. We're going to hit the brakes and we're going to throw that off of our list of choices for how we interface with the rest of the world. But meanwhile, there's all this emotion that's in your chart, and if you're being very reserved like most Aries and not getting it out, you'll find that you are constantly around people who know you without truly knowing you. And that, I believe, is the main reason why it's important that you understand that your North Node is about your destiny. And that destiny here is about being able to allow people in and let them get closer and allow yourself to nurture them, and more importantly, allow yourself to be nurtured as well. And what you're going to be learning to let go of this time is reputation and anything that has to do with judging yourself because of limited achievements. Achievements that our society says that you need in order to be deemed a certain type of authority. You need to let go of all of those old paradigms. But I imagine if you're doing a yoga intensive, not only are you already way deep in that struggle, but you're waking up every day figuring out how you can get further.
Wow, JD, thank you so much for reading for Jay. That was powerful. That was powerful. It sounds like he just kind of needs to let himself be a little bit freer, not judge himself so much.
And the more freedom he gives himself.
Enjoy the adventure of life. Yeah.
Exactly. There it is, right there.
Enjoy the adventure of life, Jay. That's your model for 2016. Enjoy the adventure of life and let people in. Let your guard down a little bit and let people in. Real quick, JD, we got a few minutes left. You mentioned early in the show Mercury retrograde. I know a lot of people talk about that and they put things on Facebook. Explain to people what Mercury retrograde means in planetary movement and what it means in astrological energy, so to speak.
Okay, well, all the planets retrograde, and retrograde is really just an illusion. It's like if I look up in the sky and the car's hood is in front of me, and I see that the stars for Mercury is to the left of my rearview mirror. If I come the next few nights, it's going to look like it's moving backwards according to the other stars. But obviously out there in space, Mercury is always going forward. The issue is that since it takes Mercury only 88 days to orbit our 100,000 mile in diameter sun one time, it can easily look like it was in one place and then in another very quickly, because it's going around much, much faster. So the concept of astrology on this level is about light and magnetism and the part of physics that I truly don't believe the human race understands to the point that it believes it does, right? We have the electromagnetic spectrum and everything that takes place beyond that, we are not absolutely sure of, right? And that light to have this impact on us here on Earth. So when Mercury goes retrograde, everything that has to do with the sign, with Virgo and Gemini and the symbolism for Mercury is supposed to be somewhat disruptive. Now, since Mercury is about communication, it's about commerce, it's about education, the mind, and obviously also he's considered the communicator of the gods. It's like it's mediumship, it's dreams, it's astral projection. It's even small trips and traffic. And then, of course, there's technology. It's all of those things get disrupted. And that means you redo, you retry, you reassess. Anything that has a re can happen. So you're not supposed to sign any important documents. You're supposed to be very careful in how you communicate with people because people are more likely to misunderstand you. There are many, many rules that go with Mercury retrograde. But never worry and never fear, it also has the exact opposite effect too, where things that you didn't settle in the past could come back and boom, they're settled. A great example for Mercury retrograde is, you know, you could be getting your life together, Mercury goes retrograde, and boom, ex relationship shows up. Whether that's good or bad, you'll have to decide. Miscommunication could go on at work over something that you actually did that was really positive. Mercury retrograde just has so many things that are associated with it. But that's just the one that most people talk about. Like right now, Jupiter, you know, is retrograde. Uranus just came out of retrograde. You know, Venus went retrograde way back in August, and that caused a lot of people's love life to literally go through the underworld, as we like to call it in astrology. But I don't want to like say it like I'm downplaying. I just want people to know that there's more to it than just the surface.
Right. Right, and it's important not to be afraid of things. You know, it, being aware of something is one thing. Being afraid of it is something completely different.
Precisely.
JD, thank you. Thank you. My music, sorry about that. I hope this is the first of many visits that you have with us. I know there's a lot of information that you can share with people, and I want to thank you, and I hope you come back.
My pleasure. It was an absolute pleasure to be invited, and I will be here when you need me, and I look forward to connecting with the many people who seek to share time.
All right. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for joining us for Al Magi Nation Radio. Once again, I am your host, Saba Noor, and you all have a good evening. Please tune in next week as we have Esu Sango from the Yoruba Society. He'll be doing live readings as well. So please tune in, and I will see you next week. Thank you.